If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Listening to Blue Railroad Train, a song originally penned by Tony Rice, but on this occasion performed by Barry Waldrop and Marty Raybon from the forthcoming album Barry Waldrop and Friends Celebrate Tony Rice. Last year, on Christmas Day 2020, we lost the great Tony Rice. He was an influential acoustic guitar player, not just for the bluegrass community, but for the folk and acoustic jazz worlds as well. He was undoubtedly one of the best acoustic players at his peak, and likely since. His credits are too numerous to mention here, but some career highlights include playing in the Bluegrass Alliance and the New South, and collaborations with the likes of Ricky Skaggs, David Grisman, Bela Fleck, and Jerry Garcia, just to name a few. Guitarist and multi-instrumentalist Barry Waldrop, a student of Rice's playing and one of the bluegrass community's current veterans, has been working on a tribute to Tony Rice with other musicians over the course of the past year. He will release Barry Waldrop and Friends Celebrate Tony Rice on December 24th, a record he plays on, produced, and has poured tons of love into. The album is full of a who's who of the bluegrass folk and Americana communities and includes collaborations with Jim Lauderdale, Larry Campbell, Vince Gill, Warren Haynes, and others. It was my great pleasure to catch up with Barry to talk about Tony Rice, the forthcoming compilation, and much more.
we lost Tony Rice a year ago, almost to the day. Was the inspiration to make this record immediate for you? Did you know that this is something that you wanted to do almost immediately when he passed?
Well, actually, this project started 7 years ago. And at that time, I had been approached by a label to contribute a song to a Tony Rice tribute. So I went into the studio and I got John Cowan, Oteil Burbridge, and Benji Shanks to go in with me, and we recorded one song to contribute to this album. And we never heard anything else about it. And the album never was released. I'm really not sure what happened there. So nothing else was ever done. And then, you know, right after Tony passed, my manager, Brian Smith, called me and said, "You think this might be a good time to release that single?" So I said, "Yes, that I think that's a great idea." And after a couple of weeks of thinking about it, I just I said, "We need to do a complete album in honoring Tony." But just from talking with Tony in the past and just getting his view of music, you know, he listened to a lot of things beyond the bluegrass world. He played a lot of things beyond the bluegrass world. And not to exclude a lot of the great bluegrass artists, but I thought that this album could be something that really turned Tony's music on to a large audience by having the guest featured artists be from outside the bluegrass world. So that's the direction I took. I had a lot of friends already that I knew that were familiar with Tony and was inspired by Tony, and then made some other calls to some people that I kind of thought that probably were influenced by Tony, and that's just kind of where it all happened.
Once you made the list, and it's amazing, the featured artists on this list are incredible, obviously, and they do, as you mentioned, span genres from country to bluegrass to rock and roll to the blues. I mean, it really is a crazy group of people that you've configured here for this compilation. Did they choose the songs that they were going to perform, or is that something that you recommended to them? Because it seems in a lot of cases the songs just fit so perfectly to whoever's performing them.
Right. Every song on the album I picked for the artist, with the exception of 10 Degrees and Getting Colder. Daryl Scott really, really wanted to do that song. Daryl was a huge Gordon Lightfoot fan. Gordon wrote that song, and Daryl's also a Tony Rice, you know, fan, and has a great love for Tony. So Daryl chose that song, but all the others, I just kind of, knowing their artistry, picked a song that I thought fit them. And in every other case, all but a couple, you know, the first song we chose worked out. There was a couple of songs that we did, and then I started thinking, you know, with the producer side of my brain rather than the musician side, that, you know, I think something else might be better. So we changed a couple of songs along the line, but it all just really, really worked really, really well.
As the producer of this record, was it hard to tell some of these? Was it difficult to tell some of these savvy veterans how to perform some of these songs? I would imagine a person like Jim Lauderdale or Larry Campbell or Rodney Crowell sort of pretty much have an idea of what they want to do, and they don't necessarily need help in the studio figuring out how to take on one of Tony's songs.
No. And it's just everybody, there's no egos on this project. Everything was great. And you know, no one's trying to take control of everything. You know, I was doing this from, you know, as growing up, listening to Tony, you know, I wanted to put something together that I thought really honored him from the production side as well as the music. So nobody, you know, they just trusted me, you know, to do my job as a producer. Speaking of Rodney, it's really ironic that the song Rodney did on the album, Rodney wrote that song and Tony recorded it. Now Rodney's doing his own song in tribute to Tony. So I thought that was just a real cool thing.
Yeah, it really is amazing, considering all of the great people that are, I mean, just the voices that lend, you know, Mike Ferris has such a distinct voice and he lends a hand on a tune, Walk On Boy, Kim Ritchie with Early Morning Rain and Warren Haynes. I mean, it's not just that these are artists that have a diverse taste. It's also their voices are so distinguished that you know right away who they are and that they're contributing to this. Was everybody on board as soon as you called? I would imagine they would have been that they definitely wanted to participate.
Everyone was, you know, eager to get on board. And it's just when you're doing something like this, you know, let's say Rodney Foster, for instance, you know, I had followed Rodney's music for a long time and have a huge respect for him as a songwriter and singer, but I had never done anything, worked with Rodney at all. But I just had a great feeling just by listening to some of Rodney's stuff. I said, this guy is definitely probably someone who has been influenced by Tony Rice. And when we called Rodney, he was probably the most excited of anybody. He was just over the top excited. And he said Tony was a huge influence. And in that relationship between me and Rodney, it's what music is all about to me. It's not about the commerce side of music. It's just, you know, this is what we do and we're willing to accept whatever financial plan comes with that. I don't like putting the money before the art, so to speak. And it's just become a great friendship between me and Rodney. We're doing some things together and, you know, it's just the connections. So if you take that one incident, Tony Rice is responsible for that coming together. And then you multiply that, you know, times thousands of incidences, and that's just the way it should be in my eyes.
The one individual that's sort of out of left field, maybe on this project, who you wouldn't think necessarily has Tony Rice appreciation, is Jacob Bunton, who is a heavy metal rocker, right? I mean, you wouldn't expect that Jacob would be one of these guys that's familiar or cares that much about bluegrass music. Was it a surprise that he agreed to do this record?
Not at all. Jacob and I have known each other for about 20 years, and we actually met at one of my shows in Birmingham, Alabama. And one night Jacob was standing right in front of me at the show, and after we finished the show, he came up to me and he said, I've never experienced, you know, this type of music. And at that time it was a very kind of hot rod bluegrass type situation. And he asked me to play banjo on his new album. Well, you know, by looking at him, who's, you know, 6'4" and size 26 in the waist and black, jet black hair, black fingernails.
Yeah.
I kind of assumed what the album was probably going to be about, but I immediately said, yes, this, you know, I don't like boundaries at all. So I immediately said, yes, we played on his album, which was a blast. And after we recorded that, we just you know, became friends, and he started asking me some of the history of bluegrass and that kind of thing. And I immediately turned him on to Ricky Skaggs and Tony Rice. Right. And now he's a great flat picker. You know, he really enjoys that type of music and did a great job singing on this cut on this album. But yeah, another example of Tony's reach, you know, through others, you reach others, and this just turned him on to something that no one would ever think Jacob would be listening to this music, but he's a huge Tony Rice fan now.
The band itself is you, John Barry, and O'Teal. Is that the, and Benji Shanks, is that the, sorry, O'Teal and Benji and you, is that the main members of the band on all of these tracks, or is it sort of all over the place in terms of the band?
There's a lot of different players on different cuts. There's one drummer that we used that's on, you know, most of, there's two or three songs that does not have drums, but Kalen Berry, who is the son of John Berry, who is a featured artist on the track. But Kalen is the only drummer. We had, you know, two or three different bass players, John Cowan, Hutch Hutchinson, and Brian Hall. And then just all a ton of other musicians, Scott Vestal, Aubrey Haney, Andrea Zahn, Tammy Rogers, Emmy Lou Harris is singing on it. There's just tons of people, Kelly Johnson, a long list of people that's on different tracks.
Did this record come together during the pandemic? Is that when most of the production of this, I would imagine, because there are so many people involved in it, it must have been a choreography nightmare getting everybody to record and send their stuff in or go to Muscle Shoals and record. Like, how did that all work out?
Well, and again, it's one of those things when things start falling into place really well, especially with a large group of people like this, you know, it's meant to be, because everything was so smooth. We actually, other than the one song we recorded 7 years ago, which was me and my guitar with John Cowan singing lead vocal, everything else started in early March of 21. And we, you know, just started bringing different people in. The majority of it was cut live in Muscle Shoals in the studio. A few people, just because of, you know, traveling where they were, like Pat Simmons was in Hawaii, you know, they did their cuts there and sent them in to us after we cut the main tracks. But the majority was done in Muscle Shoals.
Yeah, it's great. It's absolutely fantastic. Did you have any surprises? I mean, obviously, as the producer and as somebody who brought all of these people together, you knew everybody, but were there any surprises in the performance from any of the artists? Was there anything that you thought, wow, it's outstanding that this is taking place and that this musician is just fantastic at whatever song they've chosen or you've chosen for them?
Well, it really not any surprises, because I knew everybody that was coming in were, you know, great artists and great musicians. You know, the magic, you know, every once in a while, you know, you make a change here and you make a change there, and it's just, you know, becomes magical. You know, I have a huge respect for Larry Campbell as a producer and as a musician. He's just absolutely extraordinary. And you know, when you're, you know, working with someone like Larry, and Larry's a huge producer as well, and they have the respect to let you do your thing. And he and I both are playing acoustic guitar on his track with him and Teresa Williams, and trading guitar licks back and forth. And you know, it's not a competition, but when he does something, it inspires me to do something here and vice versa. And it's just a great process.
What's your take? And this is sort of away from the compilation now, but I think it speaks to Tony's legacy as much as it speaks to other bluegrass musicians' legacy. What's your take on the community now and the bands that have emerged now or the players that have emerged now, whether it's Green Sky Bluegrass or Billy Strings? What's your take on sort of the status, the state of bluegrass music in 2021, and not just the notables, but some of the up and comers as well? What's your take on what's going on right now in the community?
I think it's great. I like I said earlier, I'm not someone who really likes boundaries, and I have a deep respect for Bill Monroe and the Stanley Brothers and all the traditional stuff. That's how I grew up. I played in my dad's bluegrass band. We didn't hardly play anything except Bill Monroe and Stanley Brothers and that kind of thing. Jimmy Martin. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Martin was one who kind of kicked everything into a whole different style as well. I mean, it's just, if everything stays the same, it gets boring. You know, it's just to have a deep respect for the roots and then, you know, put new branches on that, you know, and just expand and let people do their thing. It's just, you know, it's what needs to happen, you know, and, you know, anyone out there doing their thing, my opinion is where I particularly like the song or the style they're doing. If they're doing something creative, they have my respect for that.
Cool. What do you think Tony's legacy is moving forward? I mean, it's been a year since his passing, and we have a better understanding probably now of the totality of the work. What do you think his lasting legacy will be?
I think more and more people will get to know Tony Rice. Of course, the people who grew up listening to him will never forget. They're just, you know, he was just one of a kind. I think his influence will live on for, you know, for a long, long time. And that was part of the reason for this album. We want new listeners listening to Tony Rice, because we need that to go forward, because so many guitar players that haven't even started playing guitar yet could be influenced by him from listening to his music and become great guitar players. It's where it is for me. You know, I don't get inspired by listening to something that's not real, so to speak. But, you know, if I were a young guitar player sitting in front of Tony Rice or listening to his albums, you know, it would probably make me want to do that. So, and it did, you know, when I was younger. You know, I had Doc Watson, Norman Blake, and my dad, and Tony Rice. Those were the four guitar players. Mm-hmm. And what got me about Tony Rice is he just had something that was outside the box. It just really, really, I don't want to know if radical is the word to use, but just very, very intriguing and made you want to, you know, do something on your own, not really copy anybody. And that's what Tony would want to. A lot of conversations I had with Tony, one in particular, he just said, you know, do things your way, create something that I want to hear. You know, so that's another thing we did on the album. Everybody did things their way. Jimmy Hall and I played tons and tons of shows together. We are great friends, and Jimmy is a powerhouse vocalist. We went into the studio and he said, how should I do this? He said, I'm not really familiar with the song in the way that they're doing it. I can't really hear it. And I said, just go in and be Jimmy Hall. Right. And he did. And it was great.
It's interesting too, that people can come at Tony Robbins in so many, not Tony Robbins, Tony Rice in so many different ways. I grew up listening to Jerry Garcia, and of course came to Tony Rice initially from the pizza tapes. But, you know, there are people that found their entry through David Grisman. There are people that found their entry through Skaggs and Rice. There are people that found their entry through just Tony's solo work. It's really amazing that the influence is so wide, but also that so many different people were influenced by him in so many different ways. It's really amazing.
It is. And I'm a huge Jerry Garcia fan as well, and familiar with that, the pizza tapes. But yeah, you're right. And, you know, an album I did back in 2012, it was a bluegrass, not bluegrass, banjo, Southern rock record. And David Grisman is playing on that as well. And David has an open mind, just like we're talking about here. It's just,
yeah,
the levels of inspiration came, you know, from many different places, as you said there.
Thanks so much for taking the time, but more importantly, thanks for putting this collection of music together. It's quite amazing. And if you've done your job well, you'll either introduce lots of new people to Tony Rice or reintroduce people to Tony Rice's great canon of music. So thanks for doing it. And thanks again for taking the time today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks for having me.
For more on the album, Barry Waldrop and Friends Celebrate Tony Rice, visit barrywaldrop.com. Before we leave you, let's listen to another track from Barry's celebration of Tony Rice. Here is I'll Stay Around, featuring Barry Waldrop and Vince Gill.
You're leaving on the next train coming down. I love you, dear, but I won't follow. I just think I'll stay around. For someday I'll know you won't be when your true love can't be found. But if you go, dear, I won't follow. Coming down, oh, you'll be looking for me.
been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.